so I can sync up.
Oh, I thought that was recording. Dang it. That was my best stuff.
It's recording. Oh, no. Yeah. Here we go.
That's what she said.
Just kidding.
Welcome to Food, Wine, and Whiskey, a podcast about having fun conversations on tasty dishes, vinos, and spirits from around the world. Rob is your host. He is an avid home chef, WSET Level 2 award in wine, and a whiskey drinker and collector. Time to set the table. Here's Rob.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode, and we are in store for another fun conversation today. I have a longtime friend joining on the podcast, longtime through social media,
yeah.
Jamie Miller and his wife, Lisa Miller. How are you all today?
Fantastic.
Doing well.
Happy
enjoying,
to be here.
Enjoying this crazy Houston spring weather.
Beautiful.
And it's more than 10 days.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you made the point earlier, the comment earlier, that it's just so beautiful. One of you did. I can't remember who said it, but the low humidity.
Oh, yeah.
Which just makes it, you know, this time of year, a lot of times you wait till that sun goes down before you want to hang out back or outside.
Absolutely.
Right now, I mean, you can sit out there all day and just enjoy this beautiful weather.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
So I say longtime friends. We've been longtime friends on Facebook for a few years, but have never had the pleasure of meeting in person. So, you know, I put out on social media in a wine group that we're both in that I'd love to have just some folks come on and let's just have a chat and do an episode talking about the finer things in life. And Jamie, you replied and said, yeah, I'd love to do it. Now, you made a comment that you didn't think you were worthy. But after talking to you just a little bit, you're more than worthy. I think you're going to teach me a few things today.
Well, you know that group that we're in,
bunch of assholes.
Yeah, they are jerks. They are jerks. And
let's just call them out, wine nerds.
Yeah,
Jeremy nerds. Hart.
But also, as my political beliefs is not very appreciated in that group.
Doesn't align necessarily.
That's true. That group has always been a great resource for all things.
Yeah.
In food and wine, you know, but just booze, just gastronomical and I think two of the seven deadly sins.
Yeah.
You know. And what I've always enjoyed about that, I liken it to, and I've told people about this group before, is they're a bunch of NASA scientists, and I'm just the guy who's taken, you know, space 101, standing over the corner and just listening to them, because I learned so much from them. I mean, how they, you know, even the stuff regarding the industry of the back of the house, in front of the house, of how, you know what, I'm the guy that sits at the table and eats. I really have no concept of what happens in that back room on the other side of those swinging doors. I got to be more respectful of that.
Absolutely.
And quit being I'm never a jerk about anything. I'll eat it if it's cold, if it's bloody, whatever.
Yeah.
But just understand that and everything they go to. And because we, you know, we always hear the stories of all the Karens.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and the Kevins.
Yeah. Yeah, the Karens and the Kevins.
I mean, we got to get the Kevins in there. There's a few of those.
True.
The thing I like about the group, and I really appreciate about the group, is it's not just a local group here in Houston. It's global.
Correct.
Specifically, you know, continental United States is covered very well. So if you're traveling, to your point, and, you know, it's a great group, I lurk as well. Yeah. I don't post in there. I don't have enough knowledge to really post things that are I feel comfortable with.
Sure.
Because I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
But it's a great resource when you're looking to travel and you're looking for just a wine bar or a nice restaurant with a great list or a shop to go buy some bottles for whatever. You're going to be there for a week or something. I mean, I love the group for that. I really do. Yeah.
Well, and we've done that several times on various holidays where we'll just post in the group. And now it has gotten very large. I mean, it's at, 4,200 or 4,500? I mean,
it's over 5,000.
It's five now?
Yeah, 5,300 or something.
Well, there is Rudy.
Oh, yeah, from Sour Grapes.
Yeah, all the
counterfeits.
All the multiple profiles that are spoofs on everybody's name, which I always think is very funny. We'll just post, you know, hey, we're going to be in Boston. Ideas, and then they'll just inundate you. Well, you need to go here, go eat here, go drink here, go have a, you know.
It's our go-to. Yeah. Absolutely. For yeah. whenever we get ready to travel off to a new location. Like, yeah. hey, guys.
And even globally. I mean, I see people going to France or Italy. Yeah,
Sicily. It's what we did for Sicily.
Yeah. So, yeah. Jeremy Hart, there you go. Big, big plug for your group. So, yeah. if you're a big yeah. fan of wine and food and you travel and go look up Wine Nerds, spelt with a K in front of that N for nerds. Yeah. And yeah, join the group. It's, yeah. it's a great resource if you're into food and wine, for yeah. sure. Yeah,
absolutely.
Lots of yeah. knowledge there. Yeah. Free taking.
And it's a lot of behind the scenes. Again, like I said, you learn a lot of what happens in the industry, both in the wine sales industry, a lot of their I would say interpretation of especially of the corporate purchases of a lot of the different companies yeah. to where they're very opinionated. Oh, great. I don't know the company, so I'm just going to make something up.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Ford has bought Fiat now. Now Fiat screwed. Fiat was really good. Yeah. So now Ford owns it. Yeah. It's going to be
crap. Buy what's on the shelf. Don't buy anything in 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah exactly. So it's a great resource. It's a great resource.
It really is. And there's a few producers in there. There's some winemakers out oh, yeah. there. There's not yeah. a ton, not as yeah. many as that are, you know, salespeople in the industry, but there's a few. So you get their input sometimes too, which yep. is pretty yep. valuable. But today we're going to have a fun conversation, just the world of food, wine, and whiskey, and not just food, wine, and whiskey, but all the little rabbit holes that you can get down. Mm-hmm. And you all just kind of having a conversation have been very similar to me and my wife that, you know, it's a tree with all these different branches, and it's like a new branch grows every year of what we want to get into and try. And mm-hmm. and when I say get into and try, it's like you live there for a long time and you really mm-hmm. get into it, which is yeah. for us cool and fun. But for other people, they go, "You're nuts, man."
yeah. We get a lot of that.
Why you got 15 coffee brewers? You only need one. Right? Because it can be different each cup of coffee.
Every time, yeah.
We call it seasons almost. We've had conversations like we just love this season of our life. You know, it'll be the homesteading that we're particularly involved in right now with the gardening and our chickens. And
do you guys have chickens?
So we have chickens.
HOA approved chickens.
Really?
Yeah. They're therapy chickens.
Okay.
Therapy chickens.
They're yeah. chickens. They're your, for you walk them on a leash and. Yeah.
Well, they help me with calm
anxiety.
Down. Anxiety. Yeah.
Depression.
Yeah. And depression and.
Omelets.
Yeah. yeah. And yeah. Well, that's just a byproduct. Yeah, that's okay. just a byproduct. Yeah.
So. I absolutely have to say, all joking aside, they are the most docile, sweet things you can imagine. So they are really wonderful, actually, for that. But we also have a mini orchard with all kinds of fruit trees that we're doing.
We're at like 14? Yeah.
Do you have that 14 many trees? I mean, trees? I looked at your backyard on your videos
we're
that you put with all your...
We're a pie-shaped lot. Okay. So we have we don't have mm-hmm. a curb in the front of the house. Nobody can park on a curb. It's either driveway...
You're on a cul-de-sac.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay.
But the backyard is, I think it's like 218 feet, the fence
wow,
line.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. So it does that. So
yeah. But you're yeah. taking advantage.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Our mini urban farm.
Yeah.
yes.
That's awesome. Well, I saw you planting your herb garden and whatever else you're, I'm guessing there's some tomatoes and jalapenos and basil. Some corn.
You highly know, Italian. Got some, just, highly
yeah,
Italian.
Yeah. We're doing I would say we're doing a Mediterranean because it's cucumbers. You did some eggplants, but it's cucumbers, mm-hmm. onions, it's
tomatoes,
basil,
fennel, leeks.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Lettuces, radishes.
I didn't know there was, but red basil? Red basil.
Never heard of red basil. Is it actually a red leaf?
It's red. Yeah. Does it
smell like basil?
It's a burgundy, maroonish mm-hmm. kind of color.
It smells like regular basil.
Is there a flavor profile that's different?
Honestly, I have not clipped any leaves yesterday. Okay. This is my first year doing it. I will tell you, though. I will let you know.
Because from a color standpoint, that'd be cool to put in, you know, where you traditionally see the green. There's some things where red would pop and look really absolutely. Cool when you think about presentation and
yep.
stuff.
Yep.
Plus, it would be fun not to tell people. So when they took that bite, they went, this tastes like basil, but what is this?
Yeah.
It's basil. Okay.
Like you said, make a red pesto.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, wait, pesto's green, no?
A basil pesto anyway, yeah.
It's a basil. It's a red basil pesto.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, getting into the world of, you know, these things, the foods, the wines, the whiskey, how did it start for you all? Because me, I know how it started for me. I'll tell you right up front, I was one of the pickiest, my wife will tell you that I was probably the pickiest eater in the world. I grew up, you know, in mid-Missouri, a little farm town. She would tell you that she'd make fun of me if we went through a burger drive-through and it had lettuce and tomato on it. She'd say, just take it off. And I went, hell no. I'm going back in and getting it without. I mean, I wouldn't eat anything.
You suck our son. Yeah. Like that.
To now, there's nothing I won't eat, you know, or try. I mean, I want to try different stuff. And for me, it was Guy's Big Bite. You know, I was always that backyard chef.
Yeah.
Where burgers and steaks on the grill, some barbecue, love to smoke and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then, in, you know, early 2000s, I remember Guy's Big Bite came out and I would always record it, come home after church and watch his show. And I'm going, wait, there's this spiked haired blonde dude with tattoos and all these, and he's cool.
And the Camaro.
And the Camaro, and the 68 Camaro.
That's his
convertible.
Mine wasn't convertible, but mine was a 68 Camaro.
Was it really?
Yes, yeah. It was.
And, you know, this guy's cooking inside, making some what look like cool dishes. And I was like, okay, I want to start trying this. So it was that's where it started for me with going to foodnetwork.com, printing off his recipes, and making these dishes. And I remember one being a 28-layer onion cake. And at that time, I hated onions.
Wow.
And it's absolutely delicious because it's kind of a caramelized onion. So
yeah,
sweet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. With tortillas. So it looks like this thick, but it's wow. Yeah.
That sounds cool. Amazing.
Okay.
But that's what got me into food first. And then, you know, we'll get into later how it just kind of branched off into all these other things. But how about for you all? What was the first thing that started for you to go, man, the world is full of some really good things. Mm-hmm. And where did it start?
You know, I have to say that Jamie and I have been together since we were babies. You know, I was 18, he was 19. We've been together ever since, right? And having said that, we lived in the San Francisco Bay Area. So we lived a stone's throw, if you will, from Napa Valley. We knew of wine. We're surrounded by wine, obviously. And of course, we were young pups, right? You drink beer when you're that age. You know, you go to concerts, you drink beer. You know, you're not going to ever go into wine kind of thing. So we were exposed a little bit at that time. Never really had an interest. Never visited Napa. I think maybe once I did it.
Oh, that's right. You did the Napa train thing with your team.
Yeah, because it was a thing to do. But having said that, we definitely were never into wine, and we were too poor and broke anyway.
Yep.
Right? And we got married. We had babies. And so, you know, you're just working to live and living to work, right? So anyway, we really weren't into wine at all, and we'd had, you know, a glass or two, and probably somebody served us a Cabernet or something. You're like, oh wow, that's really harsh.
Yeah,
you know, it was the first time introduction to a wine. That was probably our first introduction. You're like, oh, I don't like this at all. So, but I have to say that really was Spain. We were on a trip to Spain one year. It just so happened that I
1998.
Yeah, 1998.
1998.
Worked in an industry that allowed. It doesn't really matter, but long story short, I had the benefit of getting, having my airfare essentially paid for to go home because we were traveling and working. Long story short, we ended up going to Spain one year and fell in love with Spanish
wines.
Because
it was cheaper to fly to Spain from Dallas than it was from Dallas to fly to Columbus, Ohio to meet your grandfather.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? And that's crazy.
And we took all four. Our two daughters were young at that point. And so, we took all four of us and we went to South Spain. And that's where we first tried some Spanish wines that were, I mean, I'll let Jay talk about the details of it, but it was just massive amounts of wine for $3 a bottle, $5 a bottle. And oh my God. And this is back in, like you said, 98. Yeah, 98. So
well, you bring up a great point, though, about wine, because I remember, you know, growing up, I'm 55. I'm not sure how old you all are, but we're about in that same kind of generation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, to me, it was a. You know, it was a very prestigious drink to have. You know, it was very snobby if you were drinking wine.
Yeah.
There was, you know, etiquette that you better know, you know, in order to drink that properly. There's some terminology that you better know and able
it's
to be able to talk about. That's a great word to describe it. It is very intimidating. And I think overall the wine industry is trying to do a better job of taking that intimidation away because, you know, professionals will tell you that the consumption of wine is starting to come down a little bit, and that's a little bit concerning. And they're trying to figure out how do we get the younger drinkers into wine.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what I've seen on some reports that I've read is that the cost per bottle that people are consuming is going way up.
Mm-hmm.
but the volume of wine being drunk is going way down, which means people are drinking better wine. It also means that they don't want to drink, you know, $7 Yellowtail anymore, which is probably a good thing. I mean, I'm not a fan of the critter wines.
Right.
But so I say that to say I get very envious of young people today, because we know a lot of people through the podcast and what we do socially on social media that are in their late 20s to early 40s, and a lot of them in their 30s that have gotten into wine now. And boy, I look back and wish and go, I wish I would have gotten into wine in my 20s and 30s and appreciated what it was, what it can be. Just never did that. And so it took until I was in my late 30s to start that introduction into wine.
I have to say, we encouraged our oldest, who's now 34, to get into the world of wine. As a matter of fact, she worked into Houston
Wine Merchants.
She worked one of our jobs.
Well, she was trying to remember. She also was going through the degree at the Hilton School, Hilton Management,
hospitality.
Thank you. Yeah, she was doing that, and then she realized, oh, this is a crazy industry. I don't want to do this.
Yeah. And long hours and
just crazy hours everything, and everything.
But I would say that definitely she's a loves wine. She's just like us. She just loves wine.
Yeah, and you know, I'm sure your children, because of where you are now in wine, same with us, have been exposed. So my wife, my daughter will say, "Dad, when I go out with friends now," she's 26. Mm-hmm. "When I go out with friends now, they want to get a bottle of wine, and they'll look, and I'll go, nope." Yes, we can do that one.
Yeah,
because she goes, I'm a little bit of a wine snob now.
Yeah,
and I'm glad you are.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Appreciate, you know, if you're gonna drink good stuff.
Yep.
And good doesn't mean expensive. I always try to clarify. No.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Brand name stuff is actually one of the things that we try to steer away from. Not that we don't like them, but there's just so much out there. There's such a huge variety there, and there's such small producers that have a fabulous wines. That, you know, it's like, try something original, be different. That's kind of like his tagline, right?
Yeah.
Is be original, try something different.
Yeah, be original, drink something different.
Yeah, don't just buy what you know, I guess, if that's all you know, I guess you can say. But then also then that's where you pull in the experts, right? Your sommelier, and say, okay, what would you recommend? You know, and, you know, it's okay to ask, you know. And like you said, it makes it more approachable when it's like, it's okay, you know, and it teach people that it's okay to not know everything about wine and not know how to be, you know,
proficient in it. I'll talk to people today and they think, well, but I need to be able to get this on it, you know, and, you know, we have these what are typical or traditional, you know, characteristics that people will call out. Oh, I get oak and I get a little vanilla and I get, you know, some black cherry and plum. And you don't have to do that. You know, just what I always say is just start with this. Do you like it or do you not?
Yeah.
And you're not going to like everything you drink, and you're not going to hurt my feelings if I open something and go, I'd like you to try it, and you go, not my thing. Yep. That's perfectly fine. What I also try to tell people is always when you're tasting a wine, understand how the wine is made, you know, with acidity and fruit and tannins and alcohol and all this stuff, because say that again?
The terroir, even.
Yeah, even the terroir, yeah, absolutely. Because what you should be able to do as a wine drinker is just go, is it a quality wine? I might not like it, but I don't need to crap on it because it's not a bad wine. It's just not for my profile. Mm-hmm. It's not for my palate. And, you know, there's other wines that I go, it's out of balance a little bit. That's all right. I still like it. It's still hitting with me. Yeah. So, you know, just understanding what you're drinking so that's what's important, and just saying, do I like it or not?
Well, that's back to your original question. Is like, how did you get into wine? We all start somewhere, right? We all start at a price point that you can afford, almost, right? When you're kind of getting into wine, and so you're like, well, I don't want to, you know, I have a budget, and I don't want to go too much to it. And so you can, you know, try to stay within that, and then from there, you're gonna expand and grow, obviously, from that.
Absolutely.
But you like what you like. It doesn't have to be anything particular. It doesn't have to have a price point. It doesn't have to have a label. If you like it, great. If you like a $12 bottle of wine and that's your go-to every time, God bless you. That's your bottle of wine then. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I definitely think that's part of the approachability now of wines.
And I have a similar tagline to yours where you say, drink something different. Is that what it is?
Be original, drink something different.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. I always tell people, keep exploring.
Yeah.
Drink what you like, but keep exploring, because the exploration of wine and food and whatever it is that you're, that rabbit hole you're in, it's there's no bottom. No. I mean, you're down it for
especially Houston.
Yeah.
Especially Houston. We're such a great eating town.
Oh, and we wine are such, town. I mean,
oh yeah. Here's where I'm going to shit on Dallas and
San Antonio.
They're horrible drinking towns.
Oh, are they really?
Oh, yeah. A big picture.
Eating and drinking.
There's a couple of them here and there and here and there and here. But overall, we've got so many more better drinking, better eating places.
Yeah, you know,
there's it's the variety.
I think. Well, because I think it's also because of our melting pot too. Yeah. Because we have
most diverse city in the nation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, yeah, Fort Bend County. I mean, as a realtor, I know this. Fort Bend County is the most diverse county in the entire U.S.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want the third best Somalian restaurant in the world, it's here in Fort Bend County.
Yeah.
You know, there's and that's what I love about. When I have out of town clients and first time, because it's usually med or oil and gas that come through, medical people, that you know, you drive around and you take them through the museum district, and you go 1, 2, 3, you know, Museum of Modern Art. We got this one. We got the Children's Museum. We got them all. We got a Holocaust museum. I mean, we got them all down here.
Yeah,
and of course, they're still looking for cows.
Yeah,
you know, they're looking for somebody on a horses. On a horse.
Yeah,
and I'm going you know, and then you take them there, and you're like, hey, that's a Nepalese restaurant. Yep. They're like, wow, and you're like, hold on, there's another one, another block.
Yeah.
Wait, what? You got two Nepalese restaurants? You know, that kind of thing, for example.
And then Chinatown, you know, and the flavors down there that, you know.
Yeah,
I think I always tell folks that Houston, just for cost of living and the cultures, plural, that you can get here, it's the best kept secret in the States.
Absolutely. I mean,
as far as a big city where you want that big city lifestyle with everything available to you, you know, within a 30-mile radius or whatever. Yeah. Just the best kept secret in the States.
Yeah, quality of life and the cost of living. I mean, is just
schools are for the most part.
Absolutely. You can't beat it. Yeah. Honestly, I really think it's we just told the secret. I guess.
So yeah.
Now we're screwed. I mean,
we're growing anyway, but come on.
Everyone's going to move here now. Gosh, you blew it.
When you get to town, give us a ring or look us up on social media. We'll show you around.
There you go.
Maybe.
But you know, to your point. Great restaurant scene, great food scene here in Houston. One thing that's always shocked me year after year after year, that Houston has not gotten any restaurant with a Michelin star yet. You know, Denver got one this year.
Well, I heard the whole conspiracy.
There's a conspiracy.
I don't conspiracy. There's a lot of, when I used to be in the radio industry, a payola. There's a lot of
pay to play.
You've got to pay to play,
yeah.
And you pay for them to come in, and you pay for all the advertisements, and then a year later, and that's why they talked about. I think Tampa that just got. I think it was Tampa
and Denver.
Yeah, Tampa some of the I think it was in the nerd group. They talked about this. Yep. That they even said yes, because they're in there buying the heck out of all the ads. But it's okay. I mean, I would have absolutely no problem anybody coming in and just going, you know what, I can find you a good steak place. You know, it's probably going to be an Italian place.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. That'd have a steak, but we're going to have the best Lebanese food. You're going to have the best not even Italian. You're going to have the best dish from Sardinia you've ever had.
Oh, yeah.
Because we've got 8 chefs in town that are from Sardinia. So,
and you know, with those cultures, but even then, just the local folks who have opened up mom-and-pop places.
Oh, yeah.
Banging. I mean, so good.
Yeah.
And, it's just a wonderful place to go explore and taste the world, if you will.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So wine got you into the food world.
So it's funny what happened with the whole wine thing is that our kind of life cycle of the wine, when we went to Spain, it was, again, as a dumb American, you know, first time to Europe kind of a thing.
Funny quick story, just a kind of a similar story to you all. The folks who are joining us tonight, Rip and Tracy, for dinner, they were supposed to go to Napa for a honeymoon in like 96. It might have been 2000, late 90s, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And something got all messed up, in Napa, or maybe it was fires or whatever it was. They couldn't go.
Yeah.
So they said, let's go. I think it was Spain. Maybe it might have been Italy. But one of those places, and that's how they got exposed to, can't keep drinking Napa. Now we got to go there drink old world stuff. So just
come there. You go. Old world.
Yeah.
But so when we went there, and, you know, like I said, we were in our mid-30s, early-30s, somewhere around there. And, you know, dollar was strong. Hell, I don't even think they were on the euro yet. Anyway, it doesn't matter. You know, the culture of seeing everybody smoke cigarettes in the McDonald's and order beer. And, you know, again, as an American, you're like, hey, what are you doing, dude?
Yeah.
Dude, you can't be doing that, you know. And you know, coming to restaurants and they would have put down two packs of cigarettes. And
at the restaurant,
as cliche as it sounds, light one with the other, and then you know put it out. You know, just you know, it was
like Pai Gow,
like Chinese Pai Gow casinos. So we really got exposed to a lot of the Spanish culture again because we're down in the south, we're in Malaga, you know, all that. Antonio wanted to see us. To see the wines that were so good and so cheap, and how you would go into a grocery store, and not nearly as big as a an HEB or Kroger here, but a pretty large grocery store, and there would be like the industrial palette, of just cases of wine,
really?
Again for $8, for $5, you know. So we would try some here and there and here and there and here and there. But we got kind of hooked into one, Gran Fuego. I'll never forget. I don't even know if they make it anymore, Gran Fuego. But that was the one where we kind of went, oh, that's kind of good.
Yeah.
You know, that's not that Napa punch in the mouth or that big Merlot where, you know, it does that. You're like, this is kind of good.
Yeah.
This is a really good wine. And we were there for 3 weeks. It was over Thanksgiving. It was the month of November that we were there in Spain. And so we decided, because some of our other friends that were
these $8 bottles was recently.
No, in 98.
Okay, 98. Yeah, this is 98. You were there a few months ago.
Oh, did I say a few months ago?
Did you say you were just there in November in Spain? When did you go to Spain?
Last time we were in Spain is 2015.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but no, that was 98. Okay. Oh, okay. So I might have said it. I've had too many peanuts. So as we were going through, what I said was we were there for the month of November.
Okay.
Yeah. We were for the whole month. Basically. So we had a friend of ours, she's still a great friend of ours. She is in medical sales. And back in the late 90s, medical sales, I mean, they were throwing money everywhere. So she took Lisa to like a Scotch tasting in Dallas. Of course, Dallas, you know, you can imagine what that was like. Scotch tasting events and, you know, all these different clients, you know, well before Sarbanes-Oxley, that she would take us to these great events where we would drink really nice wine, but we didn't know.
Yeah.
We didn't know. So our plan was we were going to bring back some wine for her and a bunch of other friends. And so we brought back a case of wine from Spain. And back in those days, it was, you know, you could still bring liquids on, you know, TSA and all the rest of them. Plane. I did.
Yeah.
I brought a case of wine.
Yeah.
On my shoulder as we're going through TSA in Dallas, you know, coming through, checking through. And he goes, what is that? And I go, it's a case of wine. He goes, are you allowed to bring a case of wine?
And I told him, yes.
And I said, yeah. He goes, oh, okay. So we brought a case of wine.
Boy, things have changed.
Yeah. Well, they're still not very bright because we've done some other things. But so we brought us a case of Spanish wine because we know nobody has had Spanish wine. I mean, we just know our friends. Because, again, they're the labels. They bought the Napa, you know, that kind of a thing. And and it was, again, right after Thanksgiving. And I said, well, we're going to have all these for Christmas gifts for all of our friends, this case of wine. And you're like, oh, okay, well, you know, we're gonna get together with everybody on the 15th, the 18th. Okay.
Don't tell me you drank them all.
Hey, so we don't need to give Chris and Tanya three bottles. Let's just give them two. Let's have one tonight.
That process started.
Oh, it started because nobody got any wine. We drank the whole case of wine because it was again, it was just something
that good.
It was that Gran Fuego, and for us, we were like, okay, this is different.
Yeah,
we like wine.
But you like wine. You like Old World wine.
At that time, we didn't know the difference.
Yeah, we didn't realize. We didn't realize it. We weren't going, you know. Those New World jammy Sonomas.
Yeah, big fruit flower bombs. I don't know,
those fruit bombs. Yeah, no.
No comparison.
It was.
We had no idea.
Yeah.
But I do want to say, you know, still today, Spain is great value.
Oh, absolutely. And
if you want some age on a wine for a great, I mean, you can buy a Gran Reserva that's on the shelf right now from 2004 for like $55.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you couldn't buy anything from Napa or Bordeaux from 2004 for $55. No. So it's a great region, great wines.
BCN is one of our favorite restaurants.
BCN, what is this?
Oh, it's the one here in Houston. It's so BCN, and I'm going to slaughter it. So BCN is the airport abbreviation for Barcelona, so I don't offend any of our Spaniards out there. and the other restaurant they own is MAD, airport abbreviation for Madrid. BCN and MAD.
Nice.
So BCN is for distinguished gentlemen of a certain age like you and I.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the MAD, young guys.
Yeah. And Lemon. MAD is the one with all the Instagram girls.
Oh, okay.
Because it's got all the crazy lights.
MAD. And
I went there one time. It was too much. Yeah. I'm like, I don't need all this.
Yeah.
But so we
both are amazing.
So kind of getting ahead of ourselves here. But in 2015, we went to for my 50th, we went to Spain. That was mine.
Yeah.
So 3 weeks, we went to Spain. We did Rio de Duero. We did Rivero de Duero. We did Rioja, and we went to San Sebastian.
Okay.
3 weeks of all that. Yeah. That's it.
Madrid,
obviously. Madrid. Yeah, we were in Madrid a couple of days. So when we had our first Spanish gin tonic.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which is completely different from the good American white trash red solo cup that I grew up on.
Yeah.
You know, when you think you're fancy, drink a Tanqueray.
Yeah.
You know, and
you're a big spender.
It's
not Keystone or, you know.
That's dad's
bottle. It's a mixed drink.
That's dad's bottle.
Yeah.
You're pouring from dad's bottle.
See, you make me think of my grandfather who drank, you know, 7 and 7.
Yeah.
That was
Yeah.
So one of the stories when we were there, we were at one of the bodegas there and sampled the wine. And it was amazing because it's Spanish wine. It's amazing. We like it. So what I liken a wine adventure on, and this somewhat local reference I'm going to use here. So if you go from Houston to San Antonio, you could be in an Escalade on Highway 10, lock and loaded at 74 miles an hour, sit in that front seat, and it's a comfortable ride the whole way.
Yeah.
You know, that to me is a Napa cab. That to me is just, it's like, okay.
It's nice. It's comfortable.
It's pleasant. It's
so.
Hold on.
You okay.
Hold on. The other roads are farm to market roads that you get in a Jeep with no front window that you're bouncing all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, you're only 45. You can make it a left turn. You're making a right. You've got bugs in your face, dirt, and God knows whatever else is in your teeth. You still get to San Antonio. It takes you 5 hours. It's a better trip. That's Spanish wines to me.
Okay, I like that. I like that analogy.
It's because it's just more, you know. There's more vida loca to it. There's more life to it.
And you say Spanish. I'm going to go when we say Old World. I mean, I know it encompasses a lot of countries, but I think most people go right to Spain, Italy, and France. Mm-hmm. I'll say it's Old World for that. What you're describing.
Well,
we'd be classified to that. So
to me, French wines, and we just had our anniversary a couple of months ago, and we went floating. As I jokingly told a bunch of people, we're going tubing in France, but we went on a river cruise in Bordeaux.
Okay,
and of course, it's Saint-Emilion and all, you know, all the rest of them, and you know, Pomerol, all the rest, and what I liken it to is that especially Bordeaux's, they're a velvet glove that just caresses your face. You know,
I like all these descriptors he's got.
It feels good. It feels nice. Spanish wines is a steel gauntlet that punches you.
Okay.
It punches you. I mean, you know when you're drinking a Spanish wine. Nobody goes, is this a Tempranillo?
It's a Rebel. No, it's a Rebel of wines.
This is Tempranillo. Yeah. You're tasting it. You're going, that's a Tempranillo.
Yeah, and I was more taking how you were describing it more as, you know, it's more work and struggle. And when I say work, it's more, you know, these are families who, you know, most of the wines that come from old world producers are families who've been doing this for sometimes hundreds mm-hmm. of years, yes. mm-hmm. fingers mm-hmm. in the dirt, you know,
yeah.
fourth, fifth, sixth generation yep. winemaker passing it down that, you know, to get that story behind that glass of wine or that bottle of wine mm-hmm. is what I love. Now, Napa has the same thing, but to me, Napa's more about the fruit and less about the sense of place and the story and the history.
There you go.
That's how I was taking what you were saying.
Oh, yeah.
That's adequate for
what you were saying, obviously. Yeah. Your description of old world, I would absolutely agree with that.
Different regions, because to your point on, well, I don't know what your point was on Bordeaux, but not my favorite region in France to drink. I don't drink it very often, mm-hmm. but the Rhone Valley, some places in Burgundy where you can still find some value.
Yes.
The Loire Valley,
obviously
some Champagne. Love Alsace, you know?
Yeah.
So places like that, we absolutely love. But if you ask me my favorite old world country to drink wine in, it's Italy. Mm-hmm. You know, I absolutely love Italian wines.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They're wonderful.
And we had what was funny, our first experience with old world wine was my wife and myself, what we did. Again, I think you guys were kind of saying this, when you get into wine in America, and you want to go to a wine region, Napa's it, right?
Yeah.
You go there, and then you go, wow, this is pretty good. And a lot of people confuse sweet with fruity, fruit-forward. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Napa wines aren't sweet wines. They're just big and fruit-driven. Mm-hmm. But we got into that, and you become members, and you start mm-hmm. getting every 3 months these shipments of wine. And after about 5 or 6 years of doing that, we had a big wine tasting here that we did blind. We had like mm-hmm. 15 people come over, everybody bring two bottles, set up all the glasses. And I said, you know what? Everybody's going to bring Napa wine, and we probably would too. Let's go buy some old world wines and throw them in there. Mm-hmm. And everybody could tell, is this wine bad? Is it different? Well, I mean, because it was different. Is it bad? Is there something wrong? It tastes kind of dirty. What is this?
Musty.
Even myself and my wife were like, yeah, I'm not sure if I like that. That was weird, you know, because we knew the ones who put it in there. But it's funny because then you fast forward and you go, now that's my preference.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, now to get that, I always say, and you hear a lot of wine professionals say, you want that sense of place.
Yeah.
When you hear people taste wines blind that have this experience and knowledge, they go, they can tell you where this is from, or at least in the area, the region that, you know, narrow it down. Mm-hmm. It's amazing because there is that sense of place. And that's what makes wine, to me, the story behind what you're drinking.
Yeah.
Absolutely. A great thing. An example would be my daughter when she turned 21, a Napa producer, Ragushi. We made sure we had from 1998 her birth year bottles put away so that when she turned 21, we could open it. We took her out to a nice dinner that was BYOB, and we were able to talk about, look, 21 years ago, they were harvesting. People who may not even still be alive were working on these grapes to get this bottle of wine for you. And you start thinking about that. And to me, that's the beauty of not only wine, but food and everything that we, you know, these things that we enjoy. There's a story behind how we got it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's part of our, I think, to your point, our backstory is because of our introduction into the wine world and our love immediately, we fell in love when we went abroad for the first time. But it really has driven our ongoing passion for travel and for food and wine. Our vacations include, you know, places that are famous for wine and food. We want to go and we want to see it ourselves. We want to, to your point, it's part of what makes it special is to see where they're grown and what the countryside looks like and what the people, who the people are. And, you know, that whole experience of understanding the wine to at a different level and a different degree. And honestly, you know, that I have to say that probably 99% of our trips, you know, on holidays are definitely driven to those because we want to go see where the grapes are grown and how they're grown and you know, and bring home things that you're not supposed to, like the, a piece of a vineyard that's been cut down.
Absolutely. And, yeah, I'm not saying we've done that. I'm not saying we've got three or four root stock.
No,
of
you wouldn't do that.
Spanish.
I thought about it. I would never do it. Yeah. Never.
I guess I made sure she loaded it so this way I can go. Hey, I don't know what she put inside the suitcase.
Did you get video?
Video. I got a root stocks, you know, about 2 foot long.
No, I mean of her loading it.
So. Oh, there you go. Yeah,
so it's like, hey, I didn't do it. I got video.
I was holding the camera, videotaping her putting inside the suitcase.
Yeah. He often says that when I check when I travel for business these days, because I always get busted because I have little knives, travel knives. I keep them for safety. I call me crazy. I just do, and so he's always tells me before I go to the airport, "Have you taken all the knives out of your bag, Lisa?"
Yeah,
because invariably they'll stop me in TSA, they confiscate my knife, and it gets thrown away. So
good knives getting thrown away.
Yeah. So at this point, he's kind of used to it. Like, hey, it's not me, it was her. It's her.
It's her. She's the one.
Yeah.
Anyway,
but I remember speaking of our travel, what our experience has been lately is that at one of the bodegas there in Spain, the guy asked, and he goes, "Well, how long are you here?" And I said, "We're here for 3 weeks. You know, what are you doing?" And we said, "You know, we're Ribera del Duero, we're in Rioja, we're in San Sebastian." He goes, "Well, you're gonna go into Madrid and go to the museums and, you know, the Guggenheim's here. You know, what are you gonna do? You know, are you gonna do that?" And I told him, I said, "I have no intentions of seeing an uncircumcised marbled man. I'm here to drink Spanish wine, and I'm here to eat pinchos.
Yep.
That's it. Yeah. And he goes, "Okay, well, yeah, I know what you're here for."
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's what we did. We just
ate. We're similar because when my wife and I travel, same thing, it's food and wine driven. Yeah. You know, if there's not a wine place, they're better be known for some good foods and stuff, cocktail bars, things like that.
Absolutely.
But also, I don't want to go where the tourists go. Even if we go to New York City, I want to get off the beaten path. I want to go where the locals eat.
Yeah,
exactly.
And when you travel to other countries, that's what you want to do. You want to find the places that
and that's why
you
have
to fly into them, right? You don't have to fly into them, but then you get out of the main cities. You travel the countryside. That's what we love to do.
One reason why we often travel off season.
Yeah.
Because no one's there. I mean, 100 years ago when we went to Greece, kind of the same thing. It was you know, another month there, and we hit all the islands, and a bunch of people were very apologetic. "No, you need to come back, you know, in June, July, August." I'm like, "I don't want to be here with a bunch of sweaty Germans." I don't mind every third store being closed.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
It was fabulous. I mean, it was amazing.
Towns to ourselves.
Yeah.
We've been to Napa so many times, but never in, you know, the months where everything would be in bloom or fruit would be on the vine. We always go in February or March because that's when winemakers and people are available.
Yeah.
And we can, you know, really sit down and enjoy, you know, a tasting where we can talk about it and everything. And that's what we love, is actually meeting the people
absolutely
who are doing everything.
Yeah.
Well, and that's, you know, kind of the how we've, you know, got to meet the people was, you know, again, part of our journey. Is I used to take pictures for a lot of rock and roll bands.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
Rolling Stones.
I sent a cease and desist letter to Rolling Stones because used one of my pictures.
Oh, the magazine.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of funny. Anyway, and the guy even goes, "Yeah, we screwed up. We shouldn't have done that."
Yeah.
You know. But you know, I was. You know, part of the scene here. So people would recognize me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, some guy came up to me one time and he goes, you know, "Hey, Jamie, how are you doing?" I'm like, "Yeah," you know, because a lot of times they would see me as a way to get backstage in the dressing room. Access. Yeah, whatever. All that stuff. And I was like, "Yeah, well, you know," I'm like, hey, man, what's going on? "Hey, I follow you on Facebook." I'm like, "Yeah, okay, yeah, you know,
yeah,
you and, you know, 3,800 people that need to buy Bret Michaels pictures and, you know, Godsmack pictures from me." I was like, "Yeah, okay." And he goes, "Hey, I see you guys drink wine." I'm like, yeah. He goes, I'm a wine sales rep. I'm like, hey, now you want to go backstage? Come on, let's, buddy, yeah. Old pal.
Who do you want a picture of?
Old friend, old yeah. chum. Because I, you know, in that part of I don't want to say of our life, but you know, in that
season,
in that industry, people use each other, but you got to know when.
Yeah.
You don't use each other.
Yeah,
you know, it's just one of those things. You just, I expect something from you. You expect something from me. It's agreed. You don't take any more. You don't take any less.
Yep.
You know, that kind of thing. So anyway, so when he just, you know, went, hey, want a case of wine? I went, yeah. He goes, okay, well, you know, I do, you know, Italian wines mostly, but you know, I'm like, heck yeah. So here we are in. The hotel, Derek's parking lot, you know, because he calls me at, you know, like 11 o'clock in the morning, like 2 days later. Hey, you want to come get a case of wine? I'm like, yeah.
Making a deal.
Well, I'm sure it looked real squirrely, you know.
Case of wine and four pictures.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, a couple of laminated passes. And so that's how it kind of started.
Yeah.
And then he was just, and I'm just like, oh, this is even better than that $8 bottle of Spanish wine.
Yeah.
You know, and
called Lisa right away.
Yeah. Well, so what I've always told, an analogy I've always given a lot of friends or people regarding this is that, you know, the people in the wine business, they all drive Ferraris. The analogy, yeah. We know they yeah. don't drive Ferraris. Yeah. They don't. And I drive a Pinto.
Yeah.
Every now and then they throw me the keys.
Yep.
So like when Jeremy used to have, maybe I'm not on that list anymore, but when it would be like a sales rep that would be in from Chicago and he'd have a bottle of Chateau Fonfonfonfon and he can't take it on the plane with him. Like, hey, I did pourings all day long. Hey, everybody, let's meet at this BYOB restaurant in town.
Yep.
You pay for the dumb sim. I've got the $300 bottle of Chateau Fonfonfon.
Yeah.
Heck, we used to go. Yeah, why not? It's Wednesday at 1:30. I'm going to drink that.
Absolutely.
And again, so you're just like, oh, yeah. That's okay. That's a good wine.
Good group of guys.
That's a good wine. Yeah. That's a good wine. Because I'm a drinker. Lisa's the taster. Lisa's the one that can go, do you taste the tobacco? Do you taste? I taste white fruit. You know, I taste the
You say stone. It's good or not good. I like it
basically,
or I don't like it.
Basically.
You and know. Then Lisa tells you what you like about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. She'll say, you don't taste the tobacco? And I'm like, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
But post-COVID, I don't really, it's I'm fried.
Yeah. Are you really still?
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's too bad.
It's still sad. A copper penny. Everything really? In my mouth tastes like a copper penny.
So you just want whiskey tonight?
You know what? Gins and champagnes.
Oh, really?
That's the ones that really haven't changed. Yeah, and some brown waters. Okay. But a lot of the wines, which of course made a lot of sense going to Bordeaux.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But anyway, but
she's sad, so, but I drink. I drink alone sometimes.
Yeah, she drinks alone.
I mean, I like trying to, you know, evaluate, analyze, you know, think about the wine. Mm-hmm. I'm not nearly as good like your wife. My wife is way better than mm-hmm. me at doing that. She really has a good palate, good nose.
Yep. Yep. Lisa does.
I try, but Sandra's way better than me.
Oh, well, yeah. When she'll do that, she'll go white, or she'll go, you know, the spiciness. I'm like, okay, yeah. And she'll go white pepper. And I go, what the hell's the difference between white pepper and black pepper?
Yeah.
You know, but she knows. Yeah. So our friend got us kind of down that path.
In wine.
And in wine.
So was it the traveling?
More the old world wine.
Well,
right?
The old world
Italian,
stuff. Right. So he was bringing stuff all the time and meetups. And there would be, you know, various rock and roll bands that would say, hey, you want to come on the bus? Bring a bottle.
Yeah.
You know, because they're
bring three and we'll stay the night.
I'm not saying they're, you know, they stop the druggy phase, but they sure like the wine more than they liked a baggie. And so some of these guys are like, oh crap, that's good.
Yeah.
That is really good wine. It's like, well, yeah, because you can't get this. Cause the availability that we were getting on some of them were, again, just for example, somebody made some great wine in Italy. And they said, hey, you need to take that to the States.
Yeah.
So they would bring over a pallet, hand it out to a handful of distributors and go, hey, send this around to Chicago, to Miami, to Dallas, to Houston, to San Francisco, to LA, Vegas. See who likes this. See if it's worth it for us to kick up production you know, everything else. And yeah. either we didn't like it, or when they got here, they went, oh, the taxes are how much?
Yeah. Never mind.
Yeah. So they would just leave seven cases here in the States and go, yeah, you guys keep it. We're never coming back.
Yeah.
And that was some of the wines. Because you would look at some of them, they're like, there's not even a web page for this wine.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist. Because
it's a little mom and pop shop.
Yeah, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
You know? So we were drinking just crazy good stuff like that.
But to that point of not having a label and not having, you know, it didn't exist on a website or anything, that's kind of the beauty of traveling too. Because when you go to old world countries, Spain, mm-hmm. Italy,
yeah.
a lot of these producers are so small, they don't distribute because they don't. No. They just don't make enough. You know, no. HEB is not going to buy wine because you can't support what HEB wants Correct. To buy or
yeah.
a big chain store, yeah. Total Wine or whatever. But that's the beauty of traveling is that
and
you get
to
taste these great wines that are fantastic. And notice, we keep saying great wines, not expensive wines.
No.
We're saying great in the sense of they bang when you drink them.
Yeah.
And that kind of dovetails into the whole travel with the wine nerd group is that you would say, hey, I'm going, you know, like you said, I'm going to be in Rhone. I'm going to CNDP. I'm going to Chateauneuf du Pape.
Yeah.
Who here has a distributor or a grower that we can go try?
Yeah. And they'll be like, I'll set you up with three tastings. When are you going to be there?
Absolutely. Yeah. And we went time and I mean, everything from Sicily to obviously Italy to Spain to France a couple of times. We've been so fortunate because we've got to do things that I don't want to say that. You know, you couldn't buy, but it's access.
That's exactly what it is.
You can't. I mean, some guy.
It's all about who you know.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times.
Yeah, because those. Yeah. You know. You're
back to the pictures or the passes for the wine. Yeah. I mean, it's all about those connections.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And rightfully so. You know, that's what you know it's about. But when you travel for the wine to the old world, is that where the food? Because you got to eat when you travel, right? And you start eating at these places, and you go. Okay, wait. There's some really cool food because, Lisa, we mentioned you're from Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you from originally, James? You don't want to say? You don't have to say.
Well, no.
You're from the USA.
I'm not hiding. I was a Navy brat.
I lived all over, too.
Yeah. So.
My dad was Navy 38 years.
Okay. Pensacola, Puerto Rico. Folks got a divorce, then basically grew up in the Bay Area from 74 to 94. San Francisco Bay Area.
Okay.
So, yeah, basically. Yeah. That's
you had some good eating up
that's
there.
That's a short Remember salt, pepper?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, your mom.
Yeah.
That's right. We'll get into that in a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's say, though, that his exotic father spices. Lived in the same small town in Oklahoma that I lived in. And when he was visiting his father, that's when we met.
Yeah.
So he's technically an Okiet as well.
Yeah.
He just wasn't raised
in Oklahoma. Well, my wife tells me that I'm a Texan now because I'm from Missouri. It was where I finally, you know, kind of graduated high school and all this stuff and call home.
Yeah.
And went into the military. Stationed at Fort Bliss in El Paso, met her.
Yeah.
And like you all, from before she was 21, I was 21, we started dating and have been together, you know, 30-some years now.
Yeah.
And so we say we grew up together.
Right. Yeah.
But she says now, you're a Texan. I'm like, no, I live in Texas. My kids are Texans. You know?
Yeah.
But no, I love Texas. I think it's a great state.
And,
I love Houston. But
I consider myself a Houstonian. I mean, we've been here 20 years now, I think, right?
Yeah.
Almost 21 years now.
Strangely enough.
So I'm like, oh, okay, with being a Houstonian, for sure.
But, you know, for me with food, I would think you guys going overseas a lot later when you started traveling, is that when you got that big exposure? Because me growing up in a little small town in Missouri, we had a Taco John's and a Dairy Queen. I mean, that was
Southern cooking all the way. It was fried chicken. It was chicken fried steak, baked
potatoes,
mashed potatoes, fried potatoes, beans.
Yeah.
So very Southern, very, very Southern. That's how I won him over. You know, so,
originally
my Southern cooking.
Her second salt and pepper.
All those spices and salt and pepper.
Crazy. But, salt and pepper. So I think what really started us is that when our food journey is that Lisa's always had a better job than I have. She's always been more important. She just knows how to yell at people.
she doesn't yell at you, does she?
I give him a look. He knows.
like that. Now. That there's been several positions that she's earned that she gets the corporate guy coming in from you know, four states away that want a wine and diner.
Yeah.
Okay. And our friend that did the whole wine intro for the concerts and all that, he, you know, it basically started out that I'd say, hey, Gabe, you know, some muckety muck vice president in charge of keys is coming in to wine and dine Lisa. Where do we want to go for a restaurant? Because he's got the Morton's card.
Yeah.
He's done the Del Frisco's, the Smith and Walensky's. He's had the steak. He's had the asparagus. He's had the cheesecake. And he's going to order the bottle of Caymus.
Yeah.
Just like they all do. There's nothing against it. There's nothing wrong.
Yes, there is.
But I refuse to do it.
I'm saying,
yeah. I refuse to do it. So our friend would say, you need to go to, I don't, they're closed down now because of COVID, but Divino's.
Oh, yeah.
That was one. Another Antigua Osteria was our favorite. But
anywhere unique and small, yes, where you're not going to find this anywhere else. It's that one time experience that memory is made. Time I was in Houston, we ate at this badass place.
Well, and that was the thing is that Lisa would have two guys or six guys that would all come to a dinner, and you know you've got a small mom and pop restaurant on a Wednesday night that goes, oh, hell, we just made $4,500.
Yeah.
You know?
Thank you, Lisa.
Because, well, and then that happened several times. And then in turn, whenever those guys would come into town, they would take, I don't say her competition, but they'd take her competition to there.
Their other clients.
You know, other clients. Yeah. So then when we'd show back up to Antique Osteria, for example, Velio would go, hey, you that know, guy was just all here. These guys are all here. You haven't been here for a month, but he's been back three times with, you know, all these other people. And they love that because, again, they've got the Ruth's Chris card. They've done this. They, you know, the Caymus. And the good thing about going to a place like that, it's the hey, come back to the kitchen. You guys want to come back to the kitchen and watch us make something?
I totally agree. And you can tell me if you disagree, and I don't think you do. The world of dining out has gotten very transactional.
Yeah.
Other than these mom and pop type places. Yep. You know, when you think back into the 70s and 80s when we grew up, if you went to a restaurant, I don't care where it was in whatever town you were in.
Sizzler,
Country Kitchen. Yeah. It was like the neighborhood place. You know, everybody knew each other. You hung out.
Yeah.
And a lot of locally owned places, the little diners and things like this. To your point, you knew them very well. You were friends, almost like family, and you would hang out, and you could go back and look at what they were doing or ask for something special that might not be on menu.
Yeah.
You don't see that anymore. And I get it. I mean, it's a business. Mm-hmm. It's about how many tables, the more tables we can turn, the more bottom line we're going to have. And I get it. But there's something to be said for being able to still feel like the owner, the chef, whoever's running that place, mm-hmm, truly appreciates and wants you there.
So I refer, so Arturo Boada, his restaurant. Okay, so that was another place we started going. I was tagging along with Lisa and her clients on. Yeah. And we got to have a bit of a reputation for, if you come into town, you go see Jamie and Lisa, because you're going to have a fabulous meal.
Yeah.
You're going to drink amazing wines, and you're going to have a good time. You're going to have a good time, because it was these places like that. So one time when we were at dinner at Arturo Boada's place, not Arturo.
Yeah.
You know, that whole breakup 20 years ago, whatever it was. And I was watching his reception and how she was working the room and how she went up to every table, talked to everybody. And, hey, Lisa, hey, how are you doing? I haven't seen you in a while. How are those chickens and the zucchini doing? And you're like, damn, how does she remember that? And, hey, Jamie, you know, how are those?
It's a great point.
You know, how are those sales doing, you know, in River Oak? You know, well, I wish I had some listings in River Oak. But, you know, how are those sales doing? You know, and you're just like, wow. Yeah. And I was watching her going from table to table to table and watching everybody's face light up when she came over and talked to them. And then eventually Arturo came out and, you know, slapped, you know, a few people's backs and laughed and, you know, that whole thing. And I was watching it, and I said something later to Lisa that night. I said, this is a dance they're doing. I go, this is very erotic, not sexual, but it's erotic, because when you're eating, you're smelling, You're tasting, you're looking.
Yep.
It's very sensual. It's very sensual. And I deem that is that she made everybody feel like a special princess.
Yep.
Because Arturo would come out of the back and go, "Hey, Lisa, you still want that calamari with no extra red sauce?" Whatever, whatever. And he would do that. But he did that to everybody.
Yeah.
And I thought, you would go back to that place, especially if you had clients. You would go back to that place if they would serve a pretty good hamburger, but you were treated like family rather than have the best filet you've ever had in your life, but they throw it down, forget a fork, walk off, and you just go.
And once you're gone in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm flipping the table. So I've always referred to that as the special princess treatment.
Yeah. And to your point, that filet, the experience and the taste and the appreciation of it wasn't that good.
Nah, but whatever.
That average hamburger.
Because he sat down.
That was the best burger I ever had.
Because Arturo sat down, cut it, gave half of it to my mouth, and he ate the other half and laughed and go, "Who are you guys with?" Oh, it's my client.
You guys did a little Lady and the Tramp with the burger?
Yeah, probably. Probably.
Well, I liken it to like when you walk into when the show Cheers. Remember when they did Norm? Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, a lot of the
everybody knows your name.
Absolutely, and a lot of the really great. I mean, luckily there were always a great, fabulous, amazing food for sure. But the really good ones that you wanted to go back to time and time again were the ones that would treat you like the special princess. They would. Hey, I know what you want. You know, do you want the?
See a menu like Antique Austera. We never saw the menu.
Yeah. Just bring us what we should eat today.
No lie. It was probably 3 years into it that we were there with somebody that said, "Well, I'm going to look at the menu." I go, "No, he's just going to bring stuff." He goes, "I'm going to look at the menu." I've never looked at the menu.
We took the kids. I think it was a kid that it was one of the kids' birthdays, and they were like, "I want to see the menu." I'm like, "Oh, we've never looked at the menu."
Because he'll even say it, and which makes total sense is, "Hey, fresh fish is in. Guess what you're eating tonight?
Fresh fish."
Exactly.
Whatever the chef says we should eat.
Yeah, exactly.
And the fish chef is in, so you're going to have fish.
Yeah.
And then just bring me a wine that's going to go fabulous with the dinner.
Yeah.
That's how much you trust those types of individuals. It's like you know what I like. You know what we enjoy. You know what we appreciate. And they would just.
Now, there are some exceptions to that.
Hmm.
And for me, the exceptions would be sometimes when you go to, we talk about cultures and different people being here. Because I've found some really great Asian restaurants that you just go, it's the soup Nazi. You just go in, sit down, you eat the wonderful, delicious food, and you get out. You don't question, you don't ask. Yeah. You know,
That's a good point.
So there are some places where you go, "Hey, just sit down, shut up. The food's going to come, just eat it, and let's go." But there's some great places like that here as well. And I'm saying that, you know, kind of jokingly. There are some great Asian restaurants that they're just as friendly and fine. Asian, Lebanese.
Yeah.
Have you been to Mary's? On Westheimer?
Mm-mm.
Mary's.
Oh,
Lebanese?
Yeah.
M-A-R-Y-Z?
No.
Oh, gosh. Some of the best Lebanese food we've had. Yeah.
Really?
Okay.
Delicious. Mm. And just the service, the attention to detail.
Yeah.
And
I mean, we have so many here, I don't know which one you're talking about. Yeah.
And the price. Yeah. We had four of us there with cocktails and just a table full of food. And we left and we're driving off. And I told my wife, I go, "What do you think our half was for that just amazing meal?" It was our first time there with a Lebanese friend of ours who took us.
Sure.
I go, "What do you think our half was?" She goes, $200, $250, $73.
Oh my gosh.
That can't be right. I go, I looked at it like three times going, they had to miss some stuff. And I went, they didn't miss anything.
Nope.
Wow.
I mean, amazing food for a couple, you know, 73. You can't beat that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely not.
That's part of the reason you also go explore.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's a Thai place called Sao Lao, kind of over between 290 and 45, off like where the Ella going, you know, westbound.
Mm-hmm.
And she used to have a food truck.
Oh.
Now she's got brick and mortar.
Yeah.
And it's BYOB, so you can bring your wine.
That's good.
And her foods are like, I mean, amazing.
Yeah.
The flavors, the curries that she makes. I mean, it's just amazing, amazing food. And finding these little kind of places are what Sandra and I love to do.
Oh, yeah.
We like to find these little hole in the walls and support them.
Yeah.
Because they don't have a big marketing budget. They're not out doing commercials and advertising on radio show. It's word of mouth. And luckily in today's world, there is social media, which helps a lot. But anytime somebody like me, I don't like to say I'm an influence, but, but people look at what we're eating and stuff.
Absolutely.
And we wanna highlight these places that are fantastic and get people to go there because they're that good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're huge on, you know, you especially on Google reviews. He always, you know, didn't matter if he's even a FedEx office that did a great job for him.
Yeah,
like,
I do.
He'll Google and like, he'll talk about that. But as far as, our food,
I'm a
food
giver.
And wine,
I'm
we
giver.
Definitely.
So you're saying I might get a review on the podcast?
Yeah, there you go. Well, no, I was going to review your house. You know, you drop the pin and review the house here. So.
Yeah. No, but yeah, absolutely.
But it's always fun that the way our this whole wine culture has kind of, like I said, opened you up. You're not only learning about the food, you're not only learning about the wine. And as I said about being inside the wine nerd group, is that you understand the back of the house and kind of everything they have to deal with. You know, for the chefs and the servers, and you know some of the questions they pose are just cool or depressing as hell. But I mean, just other things of how to act like a good person when you're at a dinner, you know, that, you know, like Lisa said, is that, you know, they want to encourage you to drink whatever you want to, you know, they'll sell you the $200 bottle of Camus. They don't really want to. They'd rather you drink this really good $110 bottle of fill in the blank. But they're going to sell you that $200 because you. But if you tell them, hey guys, no, I'm really open, and you know, let's stay away from the corporate juice.
Yep.
Because we actually have, when Lisa does her amazing Thanksgiving every year,
she doesn't want Camus?
No, to be no. Yeah, the corporate juice is not allowed in the house.
Yeah,
and we have actually friends of ours that show up and go, "There's no corporate juice. There's no corporate juice."
I've never heard that term, but I'm going to use it now.
Yeah,
I'm stealing that
corporate juice. But even other things like something else I've learned is that you know, if it is somewhat of a not an unusual bottle, but just something a little bit different that you know, the beverage manager or the somm hasn't had in a while, I'll always offer a glass to them.
Yeah, you told me your notes. That was a big move. What do you call it? What move?
Big swinging dick move. because you know, I've learned that from other people.
I've never done that. I'm a little embarrassed that I've never done that.
No, well, because, and again, it's like one of those goofy, we were just talking about this, you know, an empty dinner promise. Hey, Rob, why don't you guys come over for dinner tonight? I fully know you're not going to come over, but it makes me look like I offered you dinner. So, you're like, dude, it's 4:30.
You're telling me sommelier's never taken a glass.
It's
many will actually.
Yeah, I'd say it's about half.
Okay,
You know they're also working, so they don't want to drink.
But just a splash.
Oh no, that's what they do. You know,
and most of them will do that just to make sure the bottles. Or do they still do that? It used to be a thing.
Yeah.
Usually they just pour it. Now they open it at the table.
But I'll tell them, the beverage manager whoever, you know, or the server that's very knowledgeable.
That's part of the criteria, right? They have to appreciate it. They have to have a sense that they're going to enjoy the wine.
Yeah. And again, especially if it's an oddball bottle, you know, or you know, whatever, that
or,
I'll just.
Or we know it's, we if we go in knowing that it's a really amazing bottle, it won't be a corporate juice per se, but we know it's an amazing bottle. You can definitely tell when that somm or that wine steward knows wine, because if you say, you know, you order a really good bottle, it's going to be, taste is just crazy good. And you offer them, like, typically that's the time they're like, oh, absolutely, I want to have a little smidge of that.
Yeah.
Because then you're like, okay, you know what you're talking about. You know the quality of this wine. You know the taste of this wine.
You know what? I that's right. Because when we were on our 30th anniversary, we did a Oceana cruise. And we brought our own booze with us.
A bunch of it.
Yeah, we brought a case of wine and a case of champagne with
us. They let you bring that much. They don't anymore.
Well, Oceana?
I don't know about Oceania, but the other big liners don't.
In a nice way, if you spend $10,000 for tickets there.
Or travel with Jamie.
Yeah.
Just get you access.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we still got the corkage fee on most of them. I think they still do. But it was like $25 a night, a bottle. It was nothing. But there were, I mean, we were pulling up like old TIG from you know 15-year-old 20-year-old TIG.
Yeah.
And of course these well, they're not psalms if they're international. What are they called? Anyway.
They're not psalms if they're international.
Where they carry
the cup.
Yeah, the cup on that. And so, we had them come from other restaurants to drink it.
That's awesome.
Because they, even though they had TIG, but it was like, you know, a 2018 or whatever it was. Well, we had like a 2009.
Yeah.
So they're coming over like, yeah. So again, to show them, you know. We got extra. I got extra scrambled eggs the next day.
I'll bet you did.
Extra scrambled eggs.
Could have got whatever you wanted extra the next day.
Yeah. So it was.
But you know, another tip I would say, or just a little bit of advice for people who might be listening, going, man, I'm getting into wine and I'm enjoying this. And I want to go out to a restaurant and order a bottle. We talked about being intimidated.
Yeah.
You know, look at the wine list, and if there's something in your budget, tell them what it is. I mean, if it's $60, tell the sommelier, and he'll recommend some, and if it's on their wine list, it's a good bottle of wine. So don't think that, you know, and it could be that maybe you could afford more, but maybe you're like, I'm not to the point where I would appreciate it. So I want to start in keeping that range that, you know, I'm still exploring. So I want to stay in a $70, $80 range. Perfectly fine. $50 range.
Great advice. That absolutely is great advice, because again, they're not going to sell any, they're going to put anything on their wine list that's just shit.
Absolutely.
Right? Excuse my language, but there it's going to be a decent bottle of wine, and it might just be the right bottle of wine for where you are in your palate and your journey of discovering and growing your palate and stuff like that. So
and even if you don't know that much about wine and you're not, you know, you don't have those senses for picking out things, but you want that enjoyment, that experience of having a nice wine with dinner, when you tell that sommelier, here's my budget, here's what we're looking at ordering, and it's going to go.
Yeah.
It's going to work.
Absolutely.
And that's part of you having that experience that night.
Yeah. Absolutely. Even as much as, I don't want to say as much as we drink and eat, but I'll do that all the time. I'll say, well, the whole table's having a protein beef, you know, or veal. You know, what is it?
Yeah. You
know, because he should, or she, you know, knows her wine library better than I do. And there might be some off-bottle stuff or some off-list stuff, too.
Absolutely.
You know, so, yeah.
And there's some wines that go with a variety of dishes, because to your point, you know, depending on what people are ordering, there's enough people at the dinner, you know, you get two bottles, and this one's going to go with these three dishes, and this one's going to go with these three dishes, and you're good to go.
Yeah.
So
I think it's perfectly acceptable these days. Now, I hope that people feel that it's much more approachable than it used to be. It did used to be, I think, way more intimidating. You felt like you had to know about what you were talking about. You had to, you know, handle your glass properly. You had to, you know, it was just so intimidating. But I think it's way more approachable now, to where I think people, they've made it feel like, you know, it's okay to ask those questions and to say, I have a price point, and, you know, and ask for recommendations and expect that you're going to get a lovely bottle with your meal, and not feel like, I feel like an idiot. I feel like I'm.
And I think, Jamie, you brought up a good point. You don't have to be intimidated by the sommelier.
You know?
Hey, we have a sommelier if you're not sure what you want off the menu, the wine list, because they're not, to your point you said earlier, they're not going to steer you to they're not trying to upsell you. They want to make sure that you get something in a price point you want that you're going to absolutely enjoy, because they want you to come back.
Yeah.
And when you come back, you're going to be like, hey, you know, Tommy helped me last time. Is he here again?
You know,
because we're going to explore the menu a little bit as far as food, and we want him to suggest another bottle of wine.
Well, I mean, seriously, I mean, if you've ever watched the video, the movie, the song,
I guess it's
on Netflix, The Psalm, right?
Yeah.
And you realize how difficult it is to go through that educational process of becoming a psalm. Talk about giving you an appreciation for those individuals, and then knowing, like, that's their whole passion and desire is wine, and they want to teach you about wine, and it's okay to ask those questions. It's okay to make yourself vulnerable to, like, I don't really know what to order here. But, you know, and it's like they want to teach you. They want to tell you. That's what they do. That's what they love. So if you get that concept that, like, you know, they just want to help you. And then it makes it so much more enjoyable.
Well, they want you to have that
aha
one
moment.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That one glass or that one bottle that you just go, I really, really,
where's the rabbit hole?
Wine. Well, like for us, I mean, what started for us was the Spanish one in 1998, Gran Fuego. But what really kind of kicked it was probably about 10 years ago or so, 12 years ago. We were on a cruise and I was shooting pictures for rock and roll stuff. Got to know the Psalm straight away, you know, asked for him, started talking to him, started showing him some of the pictures that I, you know, because he asked, he goes, what do you drink? And I go, blah, blah, blah. He goes, oh, okay. Here's,
you know what you're
doing. Here's what, well, not that I know profile. What I'm doing, yeah, but appreciate. I appreciate. Yeah. Yep. I'm still a booger picker. But
as long as you're not an eater.
So yeah, that's true. Well, I don't know what I do in my sleep.
Lord.
But, and then he brought over tomato, I'll say it wrong. Figek.
Okay.
He brought that over and I just went, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, I've never really gone down the Bordeaux rabbit hole. But he popped it open and he goes, no, you're gonna like this. You're gonna like this. And he goes, we only have three bottles left.
Wow.
And I said, on the ship, you know, and I said, okay, well, you know, I'll get them. And he goes, you know, whatever they were, like $90. Popped it open, drank it. I went, oh, this is good. I want the other bottle. We're on the ship for a week.
Yeah.
I want the other bottle. You hold on to it. And he goes, okay. And he goes, well, the third bottle, you want me to hold on to that too? I go, no, that you guys keep it.
Yeah.
Put it on my bill. You guys keep it.
He appreciated
it. Yeah. $90.
Yeah.
And you're gonna see him again. On a cruise ship.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the one that Lisa and I just went, okay.
This is what one can be.
We're done effing around.
Yeah.
We're done effing around. This is really good. This, we understand it. Again, that velvet glove, you know, on the face. And it was funny because right on the table next to us was, I don't know how familiar you are with old school rock and roll, British rock and roll, but a band called Saxon. Yep. So the singer of Saxon, his name is Biff. And long gray hair, you know, still screams at the top octaves. I saw he's at the table next to me. I'm like, I'm gonna do the big swinging dick move. I'm gonna sing the guy that sings to 100,000 people at concerts in Donington, England. You know, a glass of wine. I go, hey, you want some of this? And he goes, well, what is it? And I showed it to him. And he goes, well, that's right by my house there in St. Emilion. Really? I know. He goes, you're buying? I go, yes, I'm buying this. I'm drinking this. I didn't tell him how much. So, but he had shared a bottle of wine with that's Biff awesome. From Saxon. Yeah. Of course, he doesn't remember me.
You know the only Biff I think of when you keep saying that.
Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Biff. But that was the one that we really, really started to go down the rabbit hole of appreciating the next level.
Yeah.
And then that's when we started going on the vacations that were more food and wine centric.
Yeah.
And then how we started really kind of peeling those through is I have crazy OCD.
Same here.
Yeah. So if we, well, like we're getting ready to go down to Paradise Valley, Mexico to go have wine down there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, that's another story.
Super excited.
Yeah. Super excited about that. But whenever we plan on a trip, I'll jump on YouTube because I figure if you are going to make a video about Dijon, France and the pizzeria there, I'm going to go to that pizzeria. It must be pretty damn good.
Yep.
So that was our whole chase down of how I would, you know, position all of our bodegas, our chateaus, all of the restaurants.
Yep.
Like for our 25th anniversary, I think it was, France, flew into Paris, got the hell out, drove out, and then just Michelin star, one star restaurants all throughout the countryside, and then flew out, you know, 3 weeks later.
Yeah.
We're done. Because it was all everything from YouTube.
I tell my kids that, you know, YouTube to us from our generation is Encyclopedia
Britannica. Absolutely.
And it's just so much easier to find. I don't have to go through the whole book. Yeah. On crack. Yeah, yeah. With some personality to
that's
it.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
No, I love that.
And, with funny, you know, algorithms.
So what other, we're going to close this out with, and we may have to come back. I think we do need to have another conversation.
Well,
we got a whole bunch of stuff.
I only got to my first paragraph.
I know.
My first line. I got a whole bunch.
This might be the Jamie and Lisa Miller series.
I tell you. He can put it down.
Just real quick, Yeah. What other rabbit holes have you gone down or are wanting to go down because of, you know, this exploration in food and wine? For me, you know, obviously whiskey has become a thing. Mm-hmm. Coffee, I went down that rabbit hole and absolutely, you know, I tend to find things that I eat or drink or like, mm-hmm. and then go down the rabbit hole. Pizza would be another one. You know, I'm down the rabbit hole of making doughs and different types of pizzas and all these different kind of things. But my wife wants to add tea to our list this year for 2024 and get in the world of teas. I go, careful what you ask for, babe.
Mm-hmm. There's some amazing ones out there. Yeah. I've actually enjoyed some really nice teas.
So there are so does she know about the tea place here in Houston?
Probably not. I don't even know about
it. Okay, so this was probably about 10 years ago.
Yeah, it may not be there anymore.
Yeah, that's true. So it was a tea place over on like Westheimer or something like that. Anyway, I mean, this is a nice, respectful way. A couple of hippies owned the place that take the total Asian tea tradition, and educational classes.
Yeah.
So it was us and four or five other people. We did this, and we're like, I did not know all this stuff about tea.
Very fascinating.
It was amazing.
Absolutely fascinating.
It was amazing.
And again, flavor profile.
Oh, you have this one to wake up. You have this one to poop. You know, you have this one to stay awake in the afternoon. You have this one to sleep.
To relax.
If you're a little nervous, you have that one.
Yeah.
And the process of it, it was just fascinating.
Oh, yeah. The temperature has to be, for this type of tea, the temperature of the water, everything.
That's right.
Just like coffees,
It is. That's right. It's very nuanced, just like anything that you get into like that, the way you actually learn about the history. But
that's everything. I mean, when you start talking about, you know, because people go pizza, and I think a lot of times people just go, well, you know, it's Little Caesars, Pizza Hut, Papa John. No. Pizza.
Yeah.
And our society today, I think, has gotten to where we're just very much into quality, knowing where the ingredients come from, liking something, but really understanding how do you take that simple dish, you know, even a burger. Mm-hmm. How do you make a gourmet burger, right? Mm-hmm. You know, those are great. Not just a Big Mac through McDonald's drive-thru.
Yeah.
So everything to me can be at a level that's just...
Oh yeah,
a rabbit hole that you can just go down and.
Absolutely. I think that I mean, Lisa has tried a whole bunch of different cuisines. We're definitely again more on the Spanish.
Top five cuisines of the world.
Cuisine is Spanish and Italian.
Top five though, Spanish, Italian.
Spanish, Italian. I would say. Americana.
Yeah, I agree.
Americana foods. I mean, you know,
when you say Americana,
chicken fried steak.
Okay, so southern type eating. Yeah,
I don't crave Wisconsin curds.
Yeah, and see the beauty of southern the category for southern food for me includes New Orleans.
Oh, no,
that's the line. Texas is Southwest.
Place. Oh, yeah.
So when you get New Orleans, it could be a category of its own.
Oh, absolutely.
It's included in Southern.
Yeah, so that 100%. Kind of falls in the Cajun, Creole, French, which is probably it's definitely up to the top five as well.
Yep.
You know?
I love Asian cuisine.
Absolutely.
You know, and you know when you talk Japanese or Chinese, I don't know if you've ever been to a little place here called Ginger and Fork.
No.
It's Hong Kong cuisine. Mary and her husband, Mark, he's a mixologist, makes these badass cocktails.
Oh.
And he has a whiskey bar and a wine collection like you've never seen.
Wow.
Which is just a little local place. It's an old house over off Studemont that they've made into this restaurant, and it's just awesome. Fantastic. You know, maybe 15 tables in there. But great, authentic. She's from Hong Kong, and all the chefs are from Hong Kong. So I always laugh because she would say it took forever to get a POS system that would – could put in English and come out, you know, in Chinese and Mandarin in the back for them to be able to. But someplace you guys might want to hit up if you like authentic Chinese.
We absolutely do. I mean, we lived in Sydney, Australia for a year at one point back in 2000. We lived in an area that was highly Mandarin Chinese. And so the cuisine was to die for.
Yeah.
You know, we would go into the restaurants and, of course, you know, most of the people that would come in to have dinner were Mandarin Chinese, of course, but they would never look up a menu. They would literally just sit down, they'd have this family style, and they would bring out all this food that's not even on the menu that we were looking at as Americans, you know, looking at this menu.
Yeah.
And like, we're like, what is that? And I want to have that. But
you know, you make me think of something, Lisa, because There used to be a restaurant here before COVID. I mean,
yeah,
did a lot of little places in, but called Duck and Bao. It was a bao, you know, the soup dumplings and things like that.
Yeah.
But Peking duck, which was fantastic. But, you know, we did a show there and we were able to get to know the owners. He was actually from New Zealand. I remember talking to him on the phone and I'm going, wait, this guy has a New Zealand, a Kiwi accent. He must not be Chinese.
Yeah.
And then he flew over to the States to do all this and we met and I'm going, oh, he is Chinese. And he goes, very common for a lot of Chinese people to actually move to New Zealand.
Absolutely.
And I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But anyway, we were having a dinner and closing down the place one night with him, Darren. And I see the workers coming out of the back with all this food. And I'm going, Darren, what is that? And he goes, oh, you don't want that. That's just what we call our, you know, mom's food.
Yeah.
So kind of what we would eat at the end of the night just to feed everybody. And I go, it looks really good. He goes, you want to try it? And I go, yeah. And he gave me some and I go, that needs to be on the menu.
Yeah.
That's really freaking good.
Not the Americanized version of all the other dishes. You're trying to feed the American palate. I'm like, I prefer to actually, like, it's completely.
Nobody wants General Tso chicken.
No, or sweet and sour chicken.
It's awful. Yeah. No, we want authentic. Yeah. So, yeah. I think we've been blessed. And to what we talked about earlier, in Houston, you're so blessed with an international ability to any, no, it doesn't matter what kind of food you want, you're going to find it here. And it's going to be amazing. I just love that about that. And we just love every type of food we've ever been exposed to. I mean,
and I always say,
not discounting any of the Thais and any food. We love them all.
Yep.
But
totally
yeah,
agree.
But I would say our go-tos when we're talking about the top five is probably what we talked about earlier, but we love them all.
Okay. So I want to do and I'm putting this on air so everybody's going to know this, a night where we do a Spanish night. Cause I've got all these old Spanish wines I want to drink, but I want to do some tapas and paella. And do a Spanish night and just drink some fun wines and eat some good food. And
I don't like paella. Liked paella.
Well, Lisa might come. I thought you liked Spanish
food.
It's
like crawfish.
What do you like? You don't like crawfish?
They're crawdads.
You don't like crawdaddies?
No. But
so what's your go-to Spanish
fixings.
Dish?
I like all the fixings that everybody does. I'll eat the crap out of the potatoes and the artichokes and the green beans and the mushrooms. Crawfish are just too hard to eat.
But in paella, you don't like the rice. I mean, to me, it's like a jambalaya or, you know, there's so many cuisines
thing.
That are
yeah,
the same
jambalaya
thing.
Yeah, jambalaya, tifa, I don't know.
What's your favorite Spanish food when you go over there?
Well, all the tapas.
Grilled octopus.
I mean, you know, I mean, we could sit here and eat ham on.
And I will tell you that that's a beautiful thing, tapas. Because there's, you know, when we talk about exploring wine and different flavors, exploring food is the same way. We like going places where it's like family style, multiple dishes, so you can try a little of everything. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go to a restaurant. It's not my – I will go.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite place to go where you just – I have to order something, you have to order I like things that – we share.
Yeah.
And
excuse me.
Exactly. Yeah.
Family style tapas is the best way to do that.
Yeah,
sure.
Tapas are great because you get all these little bites that are fantastic.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, and that was the one thing I remember in San Sebastian. You had you know, at the time, I don't know if it still is, but more per capita, more Michelin star restaurants anywhere else in the world.
Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So you would go into tapas restaurants that were just tapas. That was just,
they call them pinchos
up there. Pinchos up there.
In San Sebastian.
That you'd have pinchos restaurants up there that were just mushrooms. And they'd be cooked 20 different ways.
Oh,
or eel.
Yeah.
Or vegetarian. Or, you know, beef and pork and ta-ta-ta, you know. And you would get specialized notes. Of course, there would be the bigger ones that would have, you know, all of them. You know, you'd have some sort of marinated green beans
anchovies
and pickles and anchovies
and
that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Olives, yeah, mm-hmm.
Cheeses and absolutely amazing.
Well, we're going to close out this episode.
Yeah, we should.
Right. But I do want to say, you know, one of the main reasons I do the podcast is that, to me, food and wine and everything in all of these branches, it's about bringing people together.
Absolutely.
And getting to meet new people and enjoy a drink or a meal with new people and this is another night that I get to do that because in person, this is the first time I'm getting to meet the Millers.
Yeah.
And I think there was a movie about you all.
Uh-oh.
Meet the Millers?
Meet the Millers. Yeah, I think it was.
That is kind of a little bit like crazy lifestyle, it seems like. I'll tell you. But no.
But I love that about food and wine. I always say when you want to get to know a culture, dive into the food, dive into the drink of those places, whether it's teas or coffees or whatever their drinks are in that particular part of the world.
Yeah.
Well, as a realtor, that is the one common denominator I've always been able to talk to anybody about food.
Yeah.
I can, no matter it doesn't matter who they are.
What part of the world you come from. Mm-hmm. If you want to talk about food or drink, food. There's common ground always.
And almost every, they're proud of their food.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm always, I want to explore. I want to get to know. Yep. I want to understand the culture and why you cook it this way or do it this way. And then I'm always amazed to go, would have never thought to cook it like that. God dang, is that good.
Amazing. You know? Yeah.
Yep.
So. Well, we definitely appreciate you guys, you and Sandra, and you know, extend the invitation to come over tonight. We've had a great time doing this. When he first mentioned it, I was like, can we talk about this for an hour? And like, here we go. I think we've gone over.
Yeah, we got to come back and do it again.
All right, we did it. Yeah,
so we're at an hour and a half.
It's been a great opportunity and experience to get to know you guys, and we really appreciate that.
Well, the fun's getting ready to start.
That's right.
This is
when the microphones turn off.
We're on the appetizer stage right
cameras
now.
Cameras will stay on, but
we just had our appetizer. Now we're moving into the meat
main
of it.
Court. Yeah, that's right. Well, thank you guys for doing this. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode of Food, Wine, and Whiskey. And until our next episode, enjoy your next pour.